Welcome to the Friday Night Clive podcast with me, Clive Payne. In this podcast, we look back at the amazing charities, organisations and people we have chatted to over the past few months, all of whom have interesting and important stories to tell. We've heard a lot recently about education in the news with reports of the number of children being sent home because of COVID and the number of days that school children have been missing. Some of those figures are actually quite alarming, but there's been some successes and some positive stories as well. And one such story is about the Comeechee School in Acox Green in Birmingham and its head teacher, Sally Alexander MBE, who has recently been awarded the MBE. And Sally joins me on the line now to tell me all about the school. Good evening, Sally.
Good evening.
Thank you for joining me. First of all, tell me, Sally, what is the Comeechee School and what is its ethos?
Oh, right. Well, how long have you got? we are a very small, independent secondary school, except with a couple of primary students as well. And we are, as you say, rightly based in Acox Green. But our biggest ethos is a love of music, a love of all things music.
Now that's a school after my own heart.
Yes, mine too, absolutely. They're all expected to play an instrument, but they don't have to have played an instrument before they join. So what we're really looking for is to kind of engender a love of music, whether you're really, really good at it or whether you just enjoy, I don't know, hitting a xylophone in a school ensemble. It's all about that and the soft skills that that brings alongside it. And that's our kind of main ethos. But then alongside that was a kind of a common sense. Well, I'd like to think it's a common sense approach in that we have really, really tiny forms. So it means that we can really concentrate on the children that we have in front of us. And kind of deliver the best curriculum that we can for those children, which, of course, is very difficult in maintained schools because the classes are so large.
So how many pupils are in each class then?
Oh, eight.
Oh, crumbs. Literally a handful then.
Yeah, really, really a handful. We like to joke sometimes that it's a slightly dysfunctional large family. And that's really how it feels, because every single member of staff just gets to know the children so well that we can really support them when they need support and just help them to fly. So that's it in a nutshell, but there's so much more.
But what do you think, though, in your view, makes you stand out from other schools, other than the prerequisite and the love of music, certainly? But what else do you think? If I was a parent, not that I have children, but if I was a parent looking to send children to your school, what would be the key sort of selling point, if you like? Because it isn't just music you teach, is it?
No. It's a full secondary school. We're Ofsted registered. We've had good in all of our inspections up to date. That's a really difficult thing, actually. We do get asked that quite a lot, and we find ourselves slightly stumbling for words because it's kind of a place that you have to experience, which sounds like a bit of a cop-out, I do understand. But it is so different to, any other school that I can think of, that you have to kind of spend a couple of days with us, and what we find is, I mean, there are so many different forms of education out there. I'm not advocating that ours is the be-all and end-all and every single school should be like that, although there's maybe a little bit of me that thinks it should be.
We'll allow you a little bias.
Just a small amount of bias. But for some people, it is immediately the right place, and we tend to find that those people will spend the day with us and then start the next day and enroll in the school. And for some people, it's not. We have found, actually, over the years, that we have a slight niche in children who maybe struggle a bit in larger schools and larger settings with lots of noise and crowds and lots of people. And that's been almost a kind of a byproduct of starting the place and the enjoyment of music in the small class sizes and the relationship between staff and students, which is kind of very open and very pastoral. It's that kind of a setting.
And that's important, I think, in education these days. I think also it's fair to say it's also having the right chemistry of staff and colleagues.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I couldn't agree more. I think more and more, if COVID has shown us anything, and it's shown us a lot of very unpleasant things, I think it's shown us the best of humanity and the worst of humanity at the same time. And the best of humanity is to be applauded. But also, everybody has suffered. But I think young people suffering has been slightly left to the wayside, maybe. These young people, they should be out with their friends. That's how they get through their teenage years, and socializing and celebrating exams and ends of schools or ends of years. And they're not doing any of that. And
no.
Mental health has become, it's been more of a problem, not a problem, but we have been made more aware of mental health in young people. And I think this pandemic has really blown that wide open. So it's a hugely important part, I think, nowadays, more than ever, in education. And I'd like to think that we really approach that in the most, I can't think of another word, but pastoral, because that's really what it is.
It's
just woven into the very ethos and being of the school.
I love the name Kimichi. Where did it come from? And why was the school started in the first place?
So sometimes if I'm meeting some people and I think of some, I go, right, well, Kimichi is, it's a really old musical tradition. And then I run out of things to say. And actually, the very simple point is that Kimichi is named after my two daughters, who are called Kira and Michelle. And I did a thing and I squashed their names together. And Kimichi it was. And Kimichi it shall ever be. But some people do say this, it sounds quite musical, with the Suzuki School, which is such a huge movement in music. And for a moment I go, yes, absolutely. And then I run out of things to say, and actually, yes, it's just that simple. It's
just
my
simple
two children.
That. Brilliant. So why did the school start, Sally?
Ah, right. Well, that's my fault.
That's no bad thing, though.
I did a PGCE. At Birmingham City University, and I was a governor in a maintained primary school. I worked in maintained secondary schools. I did a PGCE, and I slightly got told off in the PGCE because I kept questioning the things that they were saying, these things in lessons, and I kept thinking, well, but this is all just paperwork, and we should be teaching the children. That's what it's all about. And paperwork has its place, but if you drown teachers in paperwork, that's all they're doing. They're not teaching.
Correct.
They're just doing paperwork. It's pointless. In one of my jobs, I got massively told off because I was making too much noise in the music room. you couldn't make it up, really. And then I have a lot of musical friends in and around the West Midlands, music teachers, peripatetic teachers, ex-heads of music. And the story was, it was always just a bit depressing, if I'm going to be honest. GCSE music was an after-school club or an afterthought. And the first thing to be cut from the curriculum, not everywhere, but too often, was music. And I just thought it's just so backwards because actually music itself as a discrete subject, if you're playing it, not sat in front of YouTube, that's not teaching music. That's just watching YouTube. So actually teaching music and playing instruments, no matter how good or bad you are, doing that brings so many skills with it that to cut that as the first thing seemed really pointless. So I thought, right, well, when I got told off for making too much noise in the music room, I figured that was my opportunity to leave and just start a school. I thought, how hard can it be to start a school? How hard can it be? Turns out it's quite hard.
I bet it is.
But there we go. And that was 7 years ago. And it's been a real adventure ever since. And we are looking at opening another one in the Worcester area and expanding our little family. And you mentioned earlier a good staff team and colleagues, and I am so lucky that I am surrounded by the most marvelous team of people who listen to some of my crazy ideas and go with them and put me in the right place if they're too crazy, and are super supportive and wonderful at their jobs and brilliant with the kids. So yeah, it's a real, when I said it was possibly a slightly dysfunctional family, that is exactly how it feels, which is, it means it's a wonderful place to work, actually, but despite all the frustrations that come with. Yeah, absolutely.
Great fun and great rewards, and those are the key things. Now, I mean, why is music so important in education? Because when I did music, I loved it, and I learned to read music, and I learned to perfect my voice and sing and perform and do all those sort of things, which I, given half a chance, I would do now. But it's also good for mental health. But why is it important in education, first of all?
Oh, well, crumbs. I mean, there's all sorts of scientific studies that have been done on the benefit of specifically playing a musical instrument on the brain, and actually its connection with school subjects such as languages, maths, and even just the positive impact that it has on your brain. Never mind in this kind of global age and where we're moving to ever more swiftly, the soft skills in the teamwork that you have in playing in an ensemble, and the leadership things if you are leading an ensemble, and the discipline that comes from practice and playing with a group of other people. All of these things are inherent in music, in playing an instrument. And like I said, it's one of the most wonderful things, because you don't have to plan to differentiate. In any other subject, if you've got a class of 30 children or even 8 children, they're going to be mixed abilities in that class because nobody's the same. Mm-hmm. So you really have to plan quite carefully and think of who you've got in front of you. Whereas music is wonderful because you can have a really complicated part for a grade 8 violinist who can play alongside a complete beginner who is playing open strings. And both of them are making music together and learning all these skills. And it's just there. So never mind the performance opportunities. We have a wonderful concert coming up on the 24th of July. And 3 of our children are going to stand up in front of a large symphony orchestra made up of adults and conduct 3 pieces of music, which is...
That's no mean feat.
Well, awesome. It really isn't. It's no mean feat for these, and what an opportunity for these children. And I love the fact that we can give them these opportunities and do the slightly more out-of-the-box things with them and for them. It does make life exciting.
So what are the requirements to attend the school then? So going back to my hypothetical example, you know, for a parent looking to for places for their children, what does the parent need to do, and what standards does the child need to reach before they can be accepted?
Well, the wonderful thing is no standard at all. The question is, do you love music? And if the answer is yes, well, great. And we have children who have joined who have been playing instruments for years. We have children who have joined who have never played an instrument but really wanted to but never had the chance in previous schools. Mm-hmm. And they've picked something up and just gone with it. And music is, it's about a fifth of the curriculum, I think, and it's all very much performance-based. So any of the theory that goes alongside it just emphasizes all the performance that we do, and we like going into primary schools in the area and taking kids in and doing music workshops with them. So a community thing as well. I love being part of the community, taking music into the community, vice versa, having the community come into school and working with all sorts of people. Mm-hmm. It's just the most wonderful thing, music, because it really crosses all sorts of boundaries. It's
yes.
just, it's open to absolutely everybody. There is no standard, and we're not necessarily preparing them for a career in music. There are plenty of schools that can do that. You know, there's the Menuhin and Cheatons and all those wonderful schools that exist already. But, you know, if we create all these wonderful musicians, we also need an audience. You know, we need to engender this love of music so that when these children grow up, they'll go, oh, yeah, do you know what? I'd love to go and see that concert or that gig or whatever, and keep things going. And without that, then yes, it'll die out.
What age range of pupils do you have at the school?
We actually take them from 9 all the way through to 18. We don't have too many primary school children, but we accept them very specifically because we have some parents who say, no, we don't want to put our children through SATs, because I also firmly believe that they shouldn't be sitting SATs in year 6. That is for their secondary schools. It is not for the children. it is not for the teachers, it's not for the parents. So, no, absolutely not.
Fair enough.
So we take them then.
You teach, as you said earlier on, other subjects as well as music. Talk me through some of the other subjects that they'll be learning.
Well, pretty much most, I'm air quoting now, which of course you can't see, but most kind of normal subjects, I guess. So English literature and English language and math, biology, chemistry, geography, physics, history, Japanese, art, drama, lots of music. And then a real freedom also for the children who get to kind of GCSE age and might want to do something that is somewhat, let's say, off-piste, that we don't maybe necessarily teach through the curriculum, but if we think they want to do it and they're happy to kind of self-study with as much assistance as we can give, then we're happy to kind of help them along that. And so we've had pupils in the past do things like business studies and citizenship and psychology and things that aren't necessarily on our timetable, but that we do kind of cover when we're doing careers classes or life classes. We don't have PSHE, we have a life class, which involves things like, well, everything to do with life, even down to travelling.
And that's important.
And so we actually once had a mother come into the school and she said, could I use your phone? And I said, of course. What's going on? And she said, well, I've got a flat tyre, my phone is dead, and I just need to call someone so they can come and help. And I said, absolutely not. And so we took a class of children out to her car and changed her tyre for her.
That's really nice.
And that was, it was genuinely a learning moment for the children.
Yes, they'll benefit from
that. If you need to change a tyre, this is what you do. And I think you can make so many things in life into learning moments. You just need to see them and seize them. And we try and do that all the time.
You take pupils up to the age of 18 years of age. How do you prepare them for life after school?
Well, working with parents, really, and the young people themselves, at looking at where they might want to go and what they might want to do. There's so many different opportunities nowadays, you know, with apprenticeships and university and even work. We've had a whole same thing. Actually, for us, our sixth form is quite new. So this is, maybe our second year of sixth form. And it's very small because we're very aware that our specialism lies somewhat on the creative side, so the English and the music and art and that kind of thing. But we've had some that have gone into work, and we've had some that are currently looking at heading off to university. So it's always about the individual child. So it's helping them look at the options that are available and then discussing and talking through what they want to do and then what they're going to be capable of doing. Mm-hmm. It's that. So it's really as much as we can, always, from the moment they walk through the school door, it's about the individual child.
Now, you're proud of your behaviour policy. What makes it different from other schools, for example?
Crumbs. Well, I guess in as much that the school regulate themselves. I mean, that's a horrible word. I hate that word, regulate. But it's very much based more on kind of restorative justice, I guess. Mm-hmm. So it's a conversation to be had rather than isolation or detention. They're horrible words. They don't exist. Yuck. They're just not a thing that we ever need to do or would consider doing. So it's very much that. If there is an issue or if there isn't a problem, it's unpicking that problem and seeing how best to fix it so both parties know what they maybe could have done better or differently in order to avoid it, and then in order to avoid a similar problem next time. So it's, again, a very kind of pastoral approach as opposed to punishment, I guess.
The errors of our ways rather than punishment for misdemeanours.
Absolutely that, and that's really important, and that goes hand in hand with this kind of a growth mindset, which we talk about ad nauseum to the pupils, because so many of them are, especially with COVID, actually, there's so many now are almost head in sand, and I can't. I can't do this. And we're very much of the view that that's wonderful. You know, get it wrong 100 times, because the 101st time, you just might get it right.
Yes.
And all those 100 times, all that was just a learning process to help you get it right the 101st time. So embrace the getting it wrong. I get things wrong all the time. I think we're not human if we don't. It's just learning from those things. And that's a similar thing in subjects, in work, in study, and in life, and in social situations within the school. That's how we deal with things.
We never stop learning, though, until the day we die, do we really? Because, as you say, we go through life with a constant learning, and the ideal to do better, to improve, and, you know, do the very best that we can do. With, you know, resources or situations that we're in. So, you know, I think that, as you say, that's important, isn't it?
Yeah, oh, hugely important. I think the moment you turn around and say, oh, no, you know, I know it all, just stop. You should absolutely and utterly leave what you're doing, because you just never do. There's always an opportunity to learn something. I mean, quite a few of my staff actually are enrolled on master's courses or studying part-time as well as working at school. We absolutely encourage a lifelong learning should be encouraged. I really think that. And music as well. That's something that you never stop learning. I play the cello, and there are many things that I don't know about it. But I learn a bit more every time I play it.
I mentioned at the beginning that you were recently awarded the MBE. Many congratulations for that. What was that for? And tell me about your nomination, how it all came to be, and what did you think when you first received the letter that you were going to be receiving this? Because you have to keep it secret, don't you?
Yeah, you do, yes. So I received it for services to education, which was lovely. What an honour. But then there was a bit of me going, yeah, but I'm just doing what anybody else does. You know, this is just what I do. It's just what I live. But mind-numbingly, yeah, breathtaking. I mean, when I got the letter, I actually thought it wasn't a letter. Because of COVID, they were sending emails instead of letters. So I got this email, and my deputy head, who is a wonderful man, Chris Passy, he's also supremely good at photoshopping. And I thought he played this absolutely stupendous joke and photoshopped this cracker of an email. And then it turns out, actually, it wasn't a joke at all. It was, the real thing. And I had to accept, and then I had to keep it quiet for 3 weeks, which was, well, I spent those 3 weeks still thinking it was a joke or something was wrong or, I don't know, I just, yeah, it's really hard to believe. And even now, actually.
Do you know who nominated you?
Well, yes, it was him. It was Chris.
Oh, bless him.
Again, kind of just mind blown, because actually the award itself is such an honour, but to have people think so highly of you is more of an honour, actually, for me.
Tell me about the successes that some of your pupils have gone on to have after leaving your school.
We had a wonderful young man who left us to go to another school. He was the most fantastic singer. And I think Liam Price, watch this space, because that boy is going to make waves. And he was just a wonderful singer and really well worth watching. We have quite a few singers, actually. Not necessarily successful, but if I'm going to be honest, what we've seen always is that they leave school confident, heading on to the place that they really wanted to go to, doing what they want to do, happy, self-secure. And for me, I couldn't ask for more, really, because of our size, we have had some pupils who have been so traumatized, maybe is a strong word, but by big schools, because big schools are what they are. They're big schools, and they're noisy and they're crowded. And we've had quite a few success stories with some wonderful young people who just really couldn't take the noise and the size, and ended up kind of refusing to go to school because it was just too much. And to see those young people leave our doors with a smile and self-confidence and able to hold a conversation and stand their ground and shake an adult's hand and, you know, walk into a job interview and hold their own. Yeah, I'd love to be able to. Yeah, absolutely. Job done.
Where can we find out more about the school then, Sally?
Well, if you head to our website, which is www.kamichischool.co.uk, there's all sorts of information there, but even more importantly, there's our phone number. And we are a very small team, so chances are high that if you give us a call, it'll probably be me that picks up the phone, or Chris. And we are always happy to have a chat. Our door is always open to visitors. Mm-hmm. I mean, I say that, but we go on some rather exciting trips. So, you know, if we're not there, then we'd probably best call to find out that we're not somewhere like, I don't know, Iceland, which yes. is where we're planning on going in November.
Oh, lovely. Can you give your phone number a mention then, Sally?
Yes, it's 0121 679 5298. And you can always reach us on that or drop us an email, inquiries@kamichischool.co.uk, and we are always happy to, like I said, have a chat in the first instance or show people around. It's just a very open place.
Sally Alexander, MBE, head teacher of the Kamichi School in Acocks Green, thank you very much for talking to Friday Night Live. That is your lot for this episode. You can catch the programme live every Friday night on Black Country Radio from 8 p.m. If you like our podcast, please subscribe by heading to blackcountryradio.co.uk/podcast or wherever you get your podcasts from. See you very soon. This is a Black Country Radio podcast presented by Clive Payne and produced by Andy Caddick.